This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
I'm back. It's Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com and of TheYak.com, and this is a special edition of the Extra Bases podcast at TheYak.com. Episode 22 is going to be the Hall of Fame episode because the National Baseball Writers Association and the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown just announced their class, their Hall of Fame class for the 2019 inauguration in Cooperstown, New York. And we have a four-man class that includes four, I think, very, very deserving candidates, four guys that I said that I would have voted for if I had a ballot. Again, you can go back to recent episodes of the Extra Bases podcast. I think it's probably three or four episodes ago where I detailed my Hall of Fame ballot if I would have had one, and it included 10 names. I think that there were 10, perhaps even 11 or 12 guys that had worthy resumes that I believe are Hall of Fame good. So go back and listen to that after this one, or pause this one and go back and listen to that personal ballot of mine before we get to this reaction podcast. But we have a four-man class. It's Mike Mussina, Edgar Martinez, Mariano Rivera, of course, and the late Roy Halladay. Four very, very deserving guys. I don't know if there's a surprise on that list, although I think if there is, it's Mike Mussina. Just from the way the voting was going, I think that people thought that Edgar Martinez, his last year on the ballot, was going to find a way to get in. He was at 70.4% in the 2018 voting for the 2018 class. So he was less than 5% away then from getting into the Hall of Fame. Not a surprise that he got in, although I'm sure it's a big relief for him. And it was past due. You're looking at a guy that, you know, in basketball, we always have the slash line percentages that kind of really catch your eye if you're part of the 50-40-90 club, 50% from two, over 40% from three, 90% from the free throw line. Well, baseball has its own as well with its slash line, and it's, you know, 300, 400, 500. 300 a better batting average, 400 a better on-base percentage, and 500 a better slugging percentage. For his career, Edgar Martinez hit 312, got on base at a clip of 418, and slugged 515. That's sensational. I mean, he is truly one of the best right-handed hitters ever. And, you know, so much, we'll get into this with all these guys, so much of it, too, is kind of their impact on the game that goes beyond just the stats or, you know, the impact on winning. A guy like Edgar Martinez, along with Rainey Johnson and King Griffey Jr., really brought an entire city into baseball. I mean, Seattle, you ask a Mariners fan, you know, what got them into baseball, they're probably going to say Edgar, Griffey, or Randy, and especially Edgar. I mean, considering that how long he was there, his presence as a hitting coach and all those things. So Edgar Martinez worthy. Mike Mussina, I mentioned that he was maybe the surprise. He was at 63.5% last year, and he was entering his sixth year on the ballot. Again, another guy that's past due. If you look at his career and what he's done, just the longevity, he didn't have the peak that some other guys did. You know, he was a really good pitcher for a long, long, long time. I mean, a long time. Like, he led the league in games started his last season ever in 2008. He went 20-9 in the AL East, led the league in starts. It was the second time he's done that in his career. He also did that in 1996. He led the league in innings in 2000. Just a model of really good consistency for a long, long, long time. A guy with a great strikeout to walk ratio. I know, you know, Roy Halladay was a first ballot Hall of Famer. The numbers between Mussina and Halladay are very comparable. You know, Mussina's actually got better numbers in some areas. Halladay's got a better peak. But Mussina, over the long term, you can make the case that in their entire careers, was a better pitcher. If you're just looking at kind of the statistical averages and the model of consistency and those things, whereas Halliday had a stretch where he was just as dominant as can be, you know, in the middle to late part of his career. So Mike Mussina gets in. Let me look at the voting here. He received 76.7%, so he barely got in. Edgar Martinez at 85.4, Roy Halladay at 85.4, and then we're going to get to Mariano Rivera. Mariano Rivera became the first player ever to receive 100% of the votes, and I'm kind of struggled in my head with how I feel about that. I you know, crafted a tweet and then I deleted it, and then just I didn't want to be too hot takey or too snobbish as it relates to situational players, because I do think that relief pitchers do have a place in the Hall of Fame, you know. And I've too often I've kind of looked at those guys and say, oh, those, the career WAR is just not that good, you know, they don't contribute that as much as everyday players and starting pitchers. And it's true, they don't, you know. These guys often pitch, you know, 65 to 75 innings in a year. They often, you know, I don't think Rivera eclipsed 80 innings that often. In fact, I can look it up here. So I try to kind of steer clear of that, because I don't think it's the correct line of thinking to have as it relates to relief pitchers. If you just understand that they're relievers, that was their role, and they played a role on a team, a needed role on a team, and Rivera was arguably the best ever to do it, especially if you want to just file him into just an area of just closers when you look at the 652 career saves. Now, we know that that's based on situation. You got to get a lead. You got to come into the game with a lead and that sort of things. And he played for a lot of really good Yankees teams. I mean, he won 5 World Series titles. Five. That's a lot. And then think, too, you know, they could have won one in 04 when Boston came back from down 3-0. Obviously, Arizona, the hit off of Luis Gonzalez's bat was off of Mariano Rivera in that World Series that Arizona won. So it's totally possible that they could have won 7 World Series. And he was a big, big part of that. So I used to be a little snobbish about the relief pitcher stuff, because they just – you look at their career impact on winning, and it's just it can't measure up to an everyday player, or even a designated hitter, you know, or a starting pitcher. But relief pitching and closing is a part of baseball. It's been a part of baseball for a long, long time. It's becoming an increasingly more valuable part of baseball as we kind of shift in terms of the relief pitching usage and starting pitching usage. And just Rivera, you look at some of the seasons that he had as a reliever. I mean, he cracked, you know, he had 2 seasons with 3.2 F4, which is, I mean, awesome for a reliever, for a guy that didn't throw over 81 innings in either one of those seasons. That's nuts. That's nuts. And I borrow this from Chad Hastings, who, you know, does radio here in Austin at FM 104.9 The Horn, and I used to be a producer for The Drive back in the day with Jeff Ketchum, who does a bunch of stuff at theyak.com, kind of one of the founding fathers of theyak.com, and obviously owner and publisher at orangebloods.com. It was him and Chad Hastings on The Drive. Loved my time there. It was so much fun. Taught me a lot about the industry, about communicating with people, about, you know, this type of stuff, podcasting, or just, you know, that type of media and interaction and thought process as it relates to sports. And he always, you know, I think he's kind of like me with baseball and that in the NFL when it comes to the Hall of Fame stuff. And he always brought up a good point. Can you tell the story of the game without that player? You know, can you – obviously you can't tell the story of the NFL without Brett Favre. Can't tell the story of the NFL without Joe Montana. You can probably tell the story of the NFL without John Randall, who's in the Hall of Fame, which kind of – that's kind of a test with those guys. And I like to use that with baseball as well, borrowing that from Chad, is can you tell the story of baseball without Mariano Rivera? And you can't. You can't. You just simply cannot. And it goes beyond the saves. It goes beyond the career, you know, what do they have, a career ERA of 2.21? Wow, that's incredible. Career FIP at 2.76, XFIP 2.99. It goes, you know, beyond the strikeouts, the walks. And I get back to a main point. It's the cutter. Just think about how much that pitch has impacted the game of baseball. How much before he really mastered that, the cutter wasn't really much of a thing. Think too, like, how many times he was arguably the most dominant closer in the history of the game. And you look at his pitch type. Let's look at his pitch info pitch type, which only goes back to 2007 here on FanGraphs. His average for the cutter usage was 88.8%. Every dude that stepped into the batter's box knew that they were going to get a cutter almost 9 out of 10 times. And they often knew where it was going to be too. Lefties, it was going to be in on their hands, you know? But guys couldn't hit it. They could not hit it. It was just out after out after out after out. You know, I saw MLB Network put up a stat that there are 11 guys that scored earned runs off him in the playoffs. I think that's what the stat was. And there's been, you know, that's fewer than the amount of people that have walked on the moon. Like, think about that. For a guy that just threw one pitch over and over and over and over again. But just the way he could command it and his presence and all those things. So that to me is what makes Rivera a very deserving Hall of Famer, is just how he brought the cutter to baseball, how he mastered it. We'll never see anybody master the cutter like he did again. And it really started a bit of a revolution. Everybody was trying to throw cutters. You know, everybody was trying to add that to their arsenal. And a lot of guys are still using it, or still trying to, or tinkering with sinking a ball and cutting a ball and all these different things. And he was just tremendous at it. And another thing too, I think that it's, you know, getting back to that 100% thing, I don't have a problem with him getting it, even though it's still weird to me that a relief pitcher gets it. But John Smoltz made a good point, and it's just a very simple point, and it's one that I had to remind myself. We all know that there are guys in the Hall of Fame that should have received 100% of the votes. We know that. Greg Maddux, Pedro Martinez, Ken Griffey Jr., Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, you just go down the list. I mean, we know that without a doubt that there are a bunch of guys in the Hall of Fame that we can point to and say, yep, should have got 100%. So I'm not going to hold against Rivera that he's the first guy to do it and that he's a relief pitcher. I'm going to look beyond that. Although it's just something about it is weird that it's a reliever to be the first guy. But I'm glad that we now have somebody that's cracked through that barrier. That, okay, it's acceptable now to, if you think a guy is a Hall of Famer, you vote for him. You vote for him. Although we'll get to some of the guys that missed. I still feel like there's way too much of you know, turning up the nose by voters as it relates to some certain guys. Like Dan Shaughnessy of I think it's a Boston Globe, longtime columnist, covers Red Sox. He only voted for Rivera. Like, and his reasoning was just idiotic. And, you know, we still have too many of those people that just get up on a pedestal too much as it relates to voting. So on one hand, it's a little weird that a relief pitcher is the first guy. On the other hand, we know that there are plenty of guys in the Hall of Fame that should have received 100% of the vote. And hopefully now we can get past that, and the next guys that come up that are worthy of receiving votes from everybody get it. And, you know, I don't think we're going to have one of those players for a while. I think the next one would probably be Derek Jeter. Alex Rodriguez is on the ballot in 2022. He's not getting 100% of the vote. Although I Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens will never ever ever get 100% of the vote, even though their resumes are worthy of that. So Jeter's probably the next guy if you go down the list. But when Jeter comes up, as much as this pains me to say, as a Red Sox guy, that's a guy that should get 100% of the vote. It's just, it's okay. He checks all the boxes, you know, shortstop, winning, hitting, consistency, leadership, da 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 da. You just go down the list. I mean, there's really, you can't really find any weaknesses in his resume. So hopefully now that Rivera has cracked through that, it's going to put an end to that. So again, you're listening to a special edition of the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com, and we have a Hall of Fame class. The 2019 class was just announced earlier today on MLB Network. So it's going to be Edgar Martinez, longtime designated hitter for the Seattle Mariners. Mike Mussina, long time starting pitcher for the Orioles and the Yankees. Mariano Rivera, longtime elite closer for the New York Yankees. And also the late Roy Halladay, who pitched a lot for the Toronto Blue Jays and made, you know, really found his peak and his true elite status with the Philadelphia Phillies. So that's the four-member class that's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Going back over the voting again, Mariano Rivera, 100%, all 425 votes. Roy Halladay and Edgar Martinez both at 85.4%. And Mike Mussina just made the cut at 76.7%. So a very deserving four-man class. Harold Baines and Lee Smith are part of that too, as part of the Veterans Committee, even though their resumes are not worthy of being in the Hall of Fame. But what can you do? You know, this is probably another discussion for another day, but you know, Bob Costas made a great point about, I think it was Bob Costas, maybe it was Tom Verducci, of just the backlog of players now that will come up to the veteran committee at some point, and it's just like, well, how do you keep these guys out now when you're comparing them to Lee Smith and Harold Baines? Like when you know, the day when Fred McGriff goes up there. Fred McGriff was his final year on the ballot. He received 39.8%. I wouldn't have voted for him, but he was a really good player, better than Harold Baines. When he comes up for that, you know, what do you do with Fred McGriff? What do you do with these guys that were better players than the guys that the Veterans Committee just put in? So that'll be something that I think might change, maybe will change some, how the writers vote for guys, you know, during their time on the regular ballot before any sort of Veterans Committee type thing. So a four-man class, four very, very deserving people. Again, if you haven't listened to the Extra Bases podcast with my Hall of Fame ballot, if I had one, I think it's about four or five episodes ago. It might be episode 17. And by the way, like, I'm not trying to sound like a jackass, but some of the people that have a Hall of Fame ballot, really, it's kind of astonishing that they're just handing these things out to guys that don't even really cover the sport or really even, you know, pay attention to it. And they're voting on the Hall of Fame. You know, that's weird. I went back one year. It was a couple years ago, back when I had more free time and more anger about the Hall of Fame voting process. I guess that I've grown older. I just don't waste as much energy on it now. But here I am on a podcast probably talking about it for 45 minutes, an hour after they just announced the class. But anyway, I went back and looked at a list of some of the voters. And like, some of these people hadn't been covering sports for like 10 years. It was astonishing, some of the people that are on that voting list. And there's still some on there that I'm just kind of looking like, you, really? You don't even watch baseball? Don't even really follow it? You're going to vote on who gets into the Hall of Fame? But anyway, I do think that there are some interesting trends that happened, or maybe, you know, some lack of trends or movement or whatever that happened with the voting. You know, I mentioned the jump that Mussina made all the way from he was at 65.3% and jumped up to 76.7%. That's a big jump. That's a really big jump in Hall of Fame voting. And another guy made one of those jumps, and it's Larry Walker, who I said I would have voted for if I had a ballot. In 2018, Larry Walker is at 34.1%. This year in the voting, he was at 54.6. That is a huge jump. That's a really, really big jump for a guy that, like, when you look at his career resume, it's not really a slam dunk resume. You know, I like Larry Walker a lot. I thought, you know, base running, hitting, defense. I mean, he did a lot of things extremely well. But he also, like, got injured a lot. You know, didn't play many full seasons. Didn't have that lengthy of a career. You know, which, by the way, kind of gets back to my theory that I'll have to have a podcast, or at least a portion of a podcast about this theory. That these guys that played on those turf surfaces, Ken Griffey Jr. in the Kingdom, Larry Walker and those guys in Montreal, that it just really, really hurt them later in their careers. Because running on that concrete with that thin surface on there, I mean, it's no wonder these guys were hurt later in their careers. Like, I went to the Astrodome one time for one of those fan picture days when I was a little kid, and I thought it'd be cool to slide on the turf. It was awful. It was awful. And I remember blocking a punt in high school football at Conner ISD Stadium when we were playing the Woodlands High School. And I blocked a punt, like full extension, and I landed. And I looked down, and the turf had ripped off like probably like a 3 to 4 inch square from my arm. Just completely ripped it off. I mean, like, I can't even imagine the amount of concussions guys got back in the day playing football and that stuff. But anyway, so Larry Walker doesn't really have that slam dunk type resume, but he got a massive jump. But the thing with Walker, though, is this was his ninth year on the ballot. So next year will be his last year on the ballot. That's another big jump to make. You're basically talking a 40% jump over 2 years to get into the Hall of Fame. And who knows? You know, one of the more interesting things about the voting is I think we're starting to see a bit of a shift in terms of some of the thought process. You know, take a guy like Mussina, for example. He's kind of a sabermetrics, analytics, you know, that kind of crowd. Which I am a part of. He's kind of one of their, you know, little darling guys, because it's like, hey, hello, look at the career WAR, look at the consistency, look at the strikeout to walk ratio, look at all of these things that he did in the AL East all these years, and he got a big jump. I mean, people were surprised that he got in. So I think we're starting to see more of that line of thinking. At least, you know, infiltrating the voting more, or maybe influencing the voting more with a guy like Mussina, a guy like Edgar Martinez, his final year on the ballot, he was a designated hitter. You know, a lot of people believe, hey, you know, didn't play defense, shouldn't be in. Well, he got 85.4% of the vote. A reliever, like I said, a reliever getting 100% of the vote. And I know Rivera is like one of the most universally liked baseball players ever. I mean, just the guy's presence, his leadership, his personality, his humility, like all of these things. If you have time, go read, and I'm sure a lot of the great writers, you know, Joel Sherman on MLB Network, who's a columnist, I believe for the New York Post, was talking about this, and I think he tweeted out his column from years ago. Like, go read about Mariano Rivera, like how he made it. You talk about defying the odds. Like, you know, they talked about how he... Sherman was talking about how he showed up and was signed after a tryout, even though he was pitching with a, you know, a hole in his shoe, signed for $2,000. Like, he was playing baseball at one point with a milk carton. Like, he started as a starting pitcher. He had surgery. Like, he was a non-prospect. Like, he basically like had to like reinvent himself or try to as a reliever. And then all of a sudden one day he just started cutting the ball. I mean, you talk about a guy that's overcome some things just to make it to the big leagues or just to hang around the minor leagues. And then to be the first guy to receive 100% of the vote, as, you know, universally recognized as probably the greatest closer of all time. It's quite a story. So go back and read that. But it's a relief pitcher getting 100% of the vote. And, you know, that's not a popular line of thinking if you just go by the positional type thing. And plus, too, going back to the 100% thing, so many times, well, basically every other time there's ever been a vote ever prior to this year, there's been somebody, if there's a candidate worthy of 100%, there's been somebody said, nope, not getting in first ballot, not doing it, you know, can't have a 100% voter guy. Well, that's, you know, that sort of thinking is kind of ending as well. So, but there's still, the voting still needs to come a long, long, long way. Again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com. We're doing a special Hall of Fame class reaction podcast. You know, the four guys that got in, Mariano Rivera, Roy Halladay, Edgar Martinez, Mike Mussina, all four guys that would have been on my ballot if I had a ballot. Again, you can go back to listen to that episode of the Extra Bases podcast. I believe it's episode like 17 or something like that. So go back to that after we get done wrapping up this one. But the voting still has a long way to go. Like, there's some ones on this list that are totally, just to use an Orangewood's term, mind-boggling. Like, I, you know, the Clemens Bonds thing isn't as I don't even know how to, frustrating, I guess. They had very, very marginal gains. Clemens was last year, they were both this year. Let me see. Clemens is at 59.5% this year. Bonds is at 59.5%, and last year Clemens was at 57.3 and Bonds at 56.4. So like a 2% increase for Clemens and like a 3% increase for Bonds. Next year, this is going to be their seventh year on the ballot. I'm kind of afraid that they're not going to get in, which is just going to be so weird to me. But we can at least point to that and say, okay, we understand why some people are keeping them off the list. Whether you agree with it or not, I don't. But we can kind of understand why. But there's some other ones on this list. You know, I mentioned Larry Walker making a big jump, you know, 54.6%. I can kind of see why some people would look at his career and say, yeah, I can't do it. Even though I think holding Coors Field against some of these guys is one of the dumbest things in the world. Like, hello, like, the Expos folded. Major League Baseball started a new franchise in Denver. Like, these guys played there. Like, they didn't always have a choice. Like, it's not like they, you know, free agents and just, oh, I'm gonna go here. So that line of thinking to me is really silly, especially when you look at Larry Walker's career road numbers. I believe they're actually very similar to or better than Ken Griffey Jr.'s road numbers. But anyway, you know, the Manny Ramirez one is interesting because I feel like if you vote for Bonds and Clemens, why wouldn't you vote for Manny Ramirez? That to me is an odd one. He was at 22.8%. Billy Wagner to me, now that Rivera's in, makes me wonder if he's going to get a big push in recent years. He was at 16.7%. If you look at just the sheer dominance numbers, like I'm referring to like strikeouts to walk ratio and things like that, and you know, FIP, XFIP, all those things. Like Wagner, as you stack it up besides Rivera, has got a pretty strong case. The problem is he just doesn't have that longevity and that reputation. So it's on one hand, you've got one reliever that got 100%. On the other hand, you've got a reliever that got 16.7%. Something is off there. I don't quite understand that. But maybe, you know, Wagner is going to be his fifth year on the ballot next year. Maybe Rivera's inclusion will see him jump. I'm not quite sure. Scott Rolen to me, 17.2%. He's a guy that I would have voted for. You can make the case he's one of the best defensive third basemen ever. He had some strong offensive seasons as well. If you look at his career as a whole, he's got enough to be considered for the Hall of Fame. But at 17.2%, what are the voters doing there? Maybe the most, I'm not going to say maddening, maybe the most perplexing or I guess interesting case, at least to me, excuse me, when I'm looking over these numbers, is the Omar Vizquel, Andrew Jones thing. Omar Vizquel and Andrew Jones, this is both their second year on the ballot. Omar Vizquel received 42.8% of the vote. That's a lot of vote for a guy a second year on the ballot. Only Larry Walker, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Curt Schilling, Mike Mussina, Edgar Martinez, Roy Halladay, Mariano Rivera received more votes than Omar Vizquel. I mean, Omar Vizquel received more votes than Fred McGriff, Manny Ramirez, Todd Helton, Scott Rolen, Andy Pettit. I kind of say that with some hesitation, but his career numbers, and he's known as a big postseason guy. So that to me is really weird, because if you look at Omar Vizquel's career offensively, he's basically a negative player. His career weighted runs created, 83. To put that in perspective, there would have been, if you take that Omar Vizquel's average offensive season over his career and you put it in as an individual season in this era of baseball, last season there would have been only 11 seasons worse than that. And one of those was a guy named Alcides Escobar for the Royals. Total glove-first defensive shortstop as opposed to bat. And like I'm looking at Alcides Escobar, and like he's not wizardly like Omar Vizquel defensively, but he's really good. Are you trying to tell me that Alcides Escobar is a fringe Hall of Famer or a guy that's going to get Hall of Fame votes? Like I don't get that one at all, especially when you look to the Andrew Jones thing. Andrew Jones is also in his second year on the ballot. He only received 7.5% of the voting, so he barely hung on. Barely. You have to have 5% of the votes to stay on. So second year of the ballot, barely stayed on. If you look at, you know, Andrew Jones is considered one of the greatest defensive center fielders ever by the metrics, the eyeballs, scouts, everything. That's as important of a premium position as shortstop is. And not only that, Andrew Jones hit. He hit a little bit. You know, he had some MVP caliber seasons because he did drive the ball. I mean, he had a 51 homer season. He had, I believe, 434 career homers. I'm looking that up. Yeah, 434 career homers in just over 2,000 games. Career weighted runs created of 111. That's respectable. It's not good, but it's respectable. I mean, that is going to give you some positive offensive value, whereas a guy like Nomar Vizquel, it's negative value. So that one to me is an odd one, unless there's, to me, there was only one explanation for that. In 2012, there was a report that Andrew Jones had a domestic, I don't know if it was violence, abuse, what do you want to call it, but a domestic issue with his wife. According to the report, he Christmas party, had some alcohol, something happened, and he threatened her and he grabbed her. Based on the reporting, I'm looking back, and it's, I mean, I did some search on it, and I tried to find, you know, some sort of definitive thing on it, but it sounded like eventually they reconciled and got back together. She called the divorce off. I'm not 100% sure. I was reading both the Washington Post story, and then Jay Jaffe mentioned it in his Hall of Fame breakdown. So that, to me, is like the only thing that makes sense, that there's this disparity between Nomar Vizquel and Andrew Jones. They're basically similar type players defensively, like top of the top of the top of the tier of baseball players defensively at premium positions. I mean, shortstop and center fielder, it doesn't get more premium than that as it relates to defense. And oh, by the way, Andrew Jones was a much, much, much better offensive player. He's got better career war numbers. The only thing that makes sense to me is if the domestic abuse thing, if some writers were looking at his career and they're like, okay, he's a fringe guy, but then there's this weird dark cloud kind of hanging in you know, off in the distance, that when you think about Andrew Jones, and I'll be completely honest, I had forgotten that was even a thing, just because I'm not a baseball reporter. It's been what, 7 years, 6 years, 7 years since that's happened. I don't remember it even receiving that much of a news thing. Of course, now, you know, the media, those things come to light a lot more now, which is a good thing. We need more coverage of those types of things to help prevent it. But I just don't remember it being that big of a story back then. So that would be my only explanation as to why there's that big of a disparity. Because if you look at purely from a baseball sense, statistics, importance to value, winning, you know, pitching. None of those two guys pitch. Although I bet Andrew Jones could have really brought it off the mound. He had a hose. Hitting, defense, base running, like whatever you want to look at it from a baseball perspective, as it relates to Hall of Fame and value, Andrew Jones was a way better player. He didn't have the longevity, but when you're hitting at Nomar Vizquel's rate, the longevity is almost a bit of a negative because he was such a bad offensive player. So that one to me was very interesting. But if, you know, if some writer's like, hey, there's the thing with Andrew Jones, that report that he allegedly, a keyword allegedly, I'm not, you know, saying that he was guilty. I couldn't find that he was. It just said allegedly, so I'm going to use the word allegedly again. If some people wanted to say, hey, just that was hanging over, you know, his career, just wasn't going to put him on my ballot, okay, I get it. Otherwise, though, if you're looking at just the baseball stuff, it's like, well, Nomar Vizquel, like, even on its own, the Nomar Vizquel thing, 42.8% of the votes. I mean, just because Ozzie Smith's in the Hall of Fame doesn't mean Nomar Vizquel needs to be. And Ozzie Smith was a better player than Nomar Vizquel. Ozzie Smith was a much better player. I mean, you know, granted, Vizquel was great defensively. Ozzie gave you a little something else, too. So that one, to me, like, you know, especially over guys like Scott Rolen, like, what are you doing as voters? Like, why is Nomar Vizquel getting that much of the vote? He basically provided negative offensive value his entire career. Oh, that's weird to me. But anyway, moving along. Again, you're listening to a special edition of the Extra Bases podcast on yak.com. This is the Hall of Fame 2019 class reaction podcast. Mike Mussina, Roy Halladay, Mariano Rivera, and Edgar Martinez will be your members of the 2019 Hall of Fame as voted on by the National Baseball Writers Association of America. I think that's right. I believe that's right. I'm trying to do the acronym in my head. But those are going to be your members of the 2019 Hall of Fame class. Just kind of going over some of the voting of guys beyond that. Again, those are all four guys that got in that I would have voted for if I had a ballot, which it is becoming – I need to apply for a ballot. Like, some of these people that have ballots, it just – why don't I have a ballot? You know, I probably watch 200 baseball games a year. That's just pro games and not even counting all the college games I cover. So some of the other voting things that kind of bugged me some. Kurt Schilling at 60.9%. Is it because he's kind of an asshole? Like, let's just be honest. Is that why he's not in the Hall of Fame? Because if you look at what Kurt Schilling did in his career, like, there's really – you can't make a case that he wasn't a Hall of Fame pitcher. His career F4 is at 79.8. That's tremendous. He threw over 3,000 innings. Like, we're thankfully, we're beyond the point where the wins thing is something that people hold against guys. Like, oh, he only had 216 wins. Well, he also had a career 3.23 FIP and some of the best individual seasons by a right-handed pitcher ever, including 2002 when he was absolutely insane. Had 2.40 FIP, struck out nearly 11 guys per 9 innings, barely walked above 1, 9.3 F4. Like, that's an MVP-type season. He had, you know, in 97 he had a season like that. In 98 he had a season like that. In 2001 he had a season like that. In 2002 he had a season like that. You know, his first season in Boston in 04 when they won the World Series was almost an MVP type of season. Like, his peak was awesome. And he's also got the longevity too. I know there were a couple seasons in there that were a little short, but you're talking about a guy that threw over 200 innings 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. He threw over 200 innings in one of his last seasons in 2006. So there's some durability there. There's some longevity. There's some peak. And if you look at his career relative to guys like Mussina and Holiday, it's better. It's better. I know that Mussina has him beat in terms of the longevity with the career war and things like that. But Mussina doesn't have any season that really comes close to the seasons that Schilling had in 97, 98. Mussina probably has a couple that are close to 01. Definitely not 2002. I mean, that 2002 season. And that was a streak where he went with Arizona and he only threw 168 innings in 03. But that was a three-year streak with Arizona where he struck out over 10 guys per 9 innings and walked fewer than 1.71. That's the definition of dominance. Strikeouts, you strike a ton of guys out, you don't walk anybody, and you don't get hit hard. Like, that's dominance. So why does a guy like Kurt Schilling only get 60.9% on his, you know, this is a sixth year on the ballot relative to some guys that got in that he had, you know, arguably better careers than? I don't get it unless you just – the only reason why is that some voters think he's an asshole. And if we go back – if there's one thing that voting from the writers has told us over the history of the Hall of Fame process is if some writers didn't like you, they weren't going to vote for you, no matter what you did. You could have hit 999 homers. And if you pissed them off at one point or said something bad about them or they thought you were a bad person, they weren't going to vote for you, even though there are a lot of bad people that are in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So especially a lot of assholes. There's definitely some assholes in the Hall of Fame. You know, maybe it's a politics thing. I don't know. Schilling, of course, hasn't helped himself. But the Hall of Fame, like, you got to at least – you don't have to keep the blinders on towards the on-field performance only. Like, I do think, you know, Mariano Rivera wouldn't have got 100% if Mariano Rivera wasn't just, from all accounts, a terrific human being. That's just the reality of the situation. So that stuff, you can't completely ignore all of it, but you do have to put so much weight into what these guys did on the field when it comes to this voting process, because it is the National Baseball Hall of Fame. These guys are in there because of what they did on the baseball field. You know, Ty Cobb's in the Hall of Fame. So I think Schilling will get in eventually. He's at 60.9%. He's got four more years on the ballot. So I do think at some point he's going to get in. So we'll see about some of the – Clemens and Bonds is going to be close, man. It's really going to be close. Neither one cracked 60% this year. So it's going to be close. But I don't think that there's going to be many slam dunk first ballot guys on some of the future years coming up. Maybe that helps Clemens and Bonds. I do think, you know, so much of the, I guess, the internet presence, internet baseball community kind of like really rallied around guys like Edgar Martinez and Mike Mussina. I'm wondering if Clemens and Bonds are going to be next with that. And if that's going to be enough to kind of push those guys over the hump and eventually get them in, we'll see. I can't see it happening next year. Maybe not even the year after that, but maybe that ninth or tenth year on the ballot, eventually enough people are going to be like, all right, like we know, say what you want, like Mitchell Report this, Balco that, whatever. You can't tell the story of baseball without these guys, and they are two of the greatest to ever do it. You make the case of Barry Bonds is the greatest player to ever play baseball. You make the case of Roger Clemens is the greatest right-handed pitcher to ever step on a mound. I mean, I have a hard time with a Hall of Fame that doesn't include those guys. And if you want to put it at the bottom somewhere, this guy was named in the Mitchell Port, or this guy this with Balco, or this or that, whatever, fine, do it. But they need to be on the Hall of Fame. So I think I've gotten that all out of my system. I probably forgot like at least 15, 20, 50, 95 things on my mind about the Hall of Fame voting. I don't know why I'm so passionate about it. Like, I'm not a voter. I'm not a, you know, I'm a very, very, very avid Major League Baseball fan. I guess like you kind of call me a Major League Baseball writer because I write about it in columns and Orange Bloods all the time. But I'm like, you know, I don't cover a team. I'm not a national columnist, whatever. But I don't know. It's just something that I've always been passionate about because I really think that there needs to be some consistency in the line of thinking as it comes to the voting, in that we've got a lot of guys now that we're starting to see a bunch of guys get voted on that I grew up watching all the time. As I was later in my life, I began to understand just how good these guys were. And as we learned more and more ways to evaluate players and stack them up, you know, against other players of the past and, you know, evaluate their defense and all of these sorts of things, like it's, you know, I get pretty fired up about it, obviously, especially when Andrew Jones is way down the list and Omar Vizquel is somehow almost at 50%. Well, he's closer to 40 than 50, but he's over 40%, 42.8%. My goodness. And you're talking about one of the worst hitters ever in terms of career statistics. Like, that just blows my mind. Blows my mind. So... with that, we'll wrap it up. Thank you for listening to this Hall of Fame edition of the Extra Bases Podcast in theact.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. Again, if you haven't listened to the previous installment of the Extra Bases Podcast where I outlined my thinking on the 10 guys I would have voted for on my Hall of Fame ballot because you can only vote for 10, get to theact.com, listen to that. Just go to theact.com/Austin, click on the little Extra Bases tab down there below some of our most recent podcasts and check out all those installments of the Extra Bases. In the meantime, I just did a basketball podcast. If you're into Longhorn basketball or Big 12 basketball, we got that up at Orange or at the orangeblitz.com at the yak.com/Austin. I think Jason Sukumel is going to have a recruiting podcast up tonight. Jeff Ketchum had a really entertaining Monday podcast from just kind of his thoughts over the weekend, the Matthew McConaughey stuff, football stuff, shadiness in recruiting, which you talk about a hook, a tease. Yeah, man. Give me the shadiness in recruiting. I want to hear all about that stuff. Like that's the kind of stuff that makes me want to listen to a podcast is catch telling stories or giving some opinions about that sort of stuff. So that's at orangebuzz.com. I believe there's a recent Junk Uncle up there. So Alex Dunlap's up the Senior Bowl, hip hop podcast, tech podcast. We got a lot of stuff. Get to theact.com/Austin and check out all that content. So until then, we have our Hall of Fame class. It is four guys: Edgar Martinez, Mariano Rivera, Roy Halladay, and Mike Mussina. All four very, very deserving guys. Man, I really wish Roy Halladay would have been here to see, you know, just becoming a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, just to share that experience. You know, as Jason Stark made a great point that it's been something like 83 years since there's been a player that isn't, you know, alive to, you know, to see him get into the Hall of Fame, you know, especially a first ballot guy too. So it's something that's sad, but at the same time, I think it's bringing more attention to just how great of a pitcher he was, Man, when he had it really working in Philadelphia, it was must watch television. I remember driving to Houston with Jeff Ketchum, who's a big Phillies fan. We were just like, we got to see Roy Halladay. Just got to do it. And he was like, you want to go? And I was like, yes. Ended up snagging some home seats. I believe this one, the Astros were terrible. They were in tank mode. So we got home seats behind home plate. And it was my first time to see a major league pitcher at that quality of pitcher that close behind home plate. Oh, man. Just the way he sunk it, he cut it, he spun it, like changed speeds, commanded, just – the quick tempo, the repeating of the mechanics, I mean, it was an art form on the mound. And, I mean, the way he would just slice and sink his way through lineups with these, it was truly something to watch. And I'm very fortunate to have been able to say I got to see peak Roy Halladay in person behind home plate. So thank you, Jeff Ketchum, for that. So we've kept it under an hour, which is good because I had to set a Apple Watch reminder to make sure I didn't go over an hour ranting about the Hall of Fame. So thank you for sticking with me. Thank you for remaining patient. Thank you for listening. I hope you found some of this thought-provoking. I hope you found some of this entertaining. And again, get back to theyak.com. Check out all our great content. Until next time, we'll have a lot of Texas Longhorns baseball discussion coming up on some of the next episodes of the Extra Bases podcast as the Longhorns begin practice, official practice on Friday. But until then, have a great week. Thank you again for listening. I'm Dustin McComas from OrangeBloods.com, and you've been listening to the Extra Bases Hall of Fame Edition podcast on theyak.com. Thanks for listening. Take care.